I'm a sidekick, my name is Amy. You can really ask me anything. Spiritual ass kicking's what I do, and I'm here to mentor you. You can love your life and make a change. Do it the Amy Scott Grant way. It's the state of the universe, the state of the universe. Amy Talks!
Hey, this is Amy Scott Grant. Welcome back to another installment of Amy Talks. We are looking today, we're continuing our conversation around how to get unstuck. Hooray! I know nobody likes to be stuck. And we looked last time, well, we looked at a whole bunch of stuff, but you know what we're looking at this time is specifically how to get unstuck around money and also work. Last time we looked at how to get unstuck in general and how to get unstuck in relationships. So if you didn't catch that one, make sure you catch the replay from the prior episode. Okay, so money is just one of those things that I get asked about all the time. And, you know, it's not really surprising given the amount of attachment, emotion, and expectation that is surrounding money for most people. Add to the top of that the fact that money is not a one-off issue. It's almost never a once and done, right? It's in terms of clearing. It's multi-layered, multifaceted, and it's often the issues you have with money span multiple lifetimes. So no wonder money's got your energy all in a bunch, right? But the good news is we can fix that. So here are some tips on how to get unstuck around money. So there's a method that I call the untangle, right? And, you know, okay, let me back up a little bit. So money is definitely a stressor for a lot of people, but not because they don't have enough of it. I mean, you'd think that's what it is, but not because they don't have enough, but because they've got money tangled up in places where it doesn't belong. And you can start to get unstuck around money by simply seeing it for what it is. It's ink. Printed on paper, backed up by some shiny metal bricks. If it sounds like I'm trivializing money, you may feel like I'm trivializing something that you perceive as a big problem in your life, but I'm really trying to just give you some perspective. That is really what it is. Ink on paper, backed by some shiny bricks. That's what it is. When we first moved to Colorado, my family and I, we said we thought it would be fun to take the kids on a tour of the U.S. Mint. There's only a handful of mints left in the United States, and there happens to be one in Denver. And it's actually a free tour if you're ever in Denver. The only thing you have to know is you have to get on the list like 6 months in advance. They don't even have like a paid option where you could pay and get in sooner. No, it's like you have to schedule it forever in advance, and there's no rescheduling. So you need to make sure you pick a date where you can go. So one summer we picked a date to go to the Mint and take the kids. And while we were waiting for the tour to start, there was this little room that was kind of like I wouldn't call it the lobby, but it was sort of like the holding area before the tour started. By the way, the Denver Mint only makes coins. They don't make paper money. And interestingly enough, they barely make the coins that are in circulation because there's not much of a need for that. The primary function of the Denver Mint is to make the commemorative coins, which is actually the only way the mints make a profit. I was going to say the only way they make money, but no, they technically always make money, but that's the only way that they make a profit is from the commemorative coins. You know, like remember when the quarter, when the state quarters came out, and you could like buy the sets, and then there's, you know, the gold colored dollars and all that kind of stuff, those commemorative coins. So that's primarily what they make at the Denver Mint. At any rate, while we were waiting for the tour to start, in this little room, they had some tiny little display cases on the wall and stuff. And there were a few artifacts and like museum style kind of stuff. This blew my mind, okay? Because maybe you didn't know this. I think we all know that the exchange started out as bartering, right? Like, I'll trade you my goat for 12 chickens or like whatever, you know, you had to, you raised one thing, you ended up with a lot of that one thing, but then there were other things you needed. So you traded, people had skills and they traded. And then at some point markets were set up and stuff and bartering became cumbersome, right? Because you couldn't give somebody a third of your cow, you know, without slaughtering the cow and therefore, you know, creating potential for spoilage, decreasing the value, and of course, eliminating the opportunity for milk and all this other stuff. So bartering became really cumbersome and difficult. So that's when people came up with the idea of money. But before the current paper and coin, so after bartering, but before the current paper and coin money system that we use now, people would actually use blue beads in place of money. And these weren't like fancy, you know, Swarovski crystal, counterfeit proof etched blue beads. No, these were literally little wooden beads that were handmade and painted blue. And that's what was used for money. Why? Because people agreed it had value. I have to tell you, this completely blew my mind. As I was waiting to tour the mint, I thought, wow, it's hard to believe we put all this attachment on money when literally it started out as like a handful of blue beads. And I think, you know, this is probably what, you know, how the story got, well, I don't want to say distorted, right? Because I wasn't there. But, you know, we hear about how the white man took advantage of the Native Americans with the Louisiana Purchase. They got all of the Louisiana Purchase in exchange for some beads and trinkets. But the beads were the money. Now, the Native Americans probably didn't have that same type of system. This may have been like what introduced them to the settlers' money. But really, like that was money to the settlers, were blue beads. It's mind-blowing, I tell you. Like, can you imagine taking your prized pig to market because you want to fetch the biggest price possible, right? Because your family is counting on this and you need grain and corn and wheat for the winter and all this stuff that maybe you don't grow. And you bring this pig to market that you've been, you know, that you raised and fed and fattened up, you bring it to market and you come home from market with a handful of blue beads. Now you have to put yourself in that position where you're thinking, okay, but these blue beads had value. Why did they have value? Because we agreed. Because people agreed they had value. That's why. Why would the Native Americans give up the Louisiana Purchase, all that land in exchange for beads? Because we believed it had value. We convinced them it had value and we exchanged. I'm not arguing whether it was fair, unfair, whatever. I'm just telling you, like, can you understand how it went down now? And they were like, what is this? This is money. What's money? Well, this is, you can buy things. You can go to the market and you can get, you know, what do you need for your family? You could buy it. Only because we said so. Now, do you realize that money operates the same way today? There's paper, right? You go to work or you have a business, like you provide a service or you do a job and you get a piece of paper that is really just a piece of paper that has a signature or two on it. That's in exchange for a week or 2 weeks or a month of your skill and your labor. You get a piece of paper, which we all agree is called a check or a paycheck. It's a piece of paper. Really, that's what it is. It's not all that different from a Kleenex or a flyer somebody on the street hands out to try to get you to use a coupon or go see a show. It is a piece of paper. There's nothing special about that piece. Yeah, it has a watermark, whatever. But really, it only has a watermark because people were counterfeiting them. Initially, checks didn't have watermarks. right? They had some magnetic thing. It was only so the banks could read them with their computer machinery and stuff. But really, that paper has value because we all agree it has value. Furthermore, you take that piece of paper, you bring it to the bank, you give the bank a piece of paper, and they make the numbers in your account go up according to what's on that paper. Really, when you stop to think about all this, it's kind of ludicrous. I mean, it makes sense because we need a way, like, we can't be all carrying around, you know. Can you imagine how much do you spend on groceries? Can you imagine if you had to have that amount of cash on you all the time just for groceries? Or if you had to pay your rent or your mortgage in cash? Not convenient, and I think that pickpockets and theft would go through the roof, right? If everyone had to carry cash all the time. So debit cards, credit cards, checks, sure, they're more convenient. Absolutely. But it's also kind of crazy. So you bring that to the bank and they give you an even smaller piece of paper in return, which we all agree is called a receipt, which we all agree is somehow proof that you gave them a piece of paper that we agreed had value, and they took that paper, put it in your account, and gave you a piece of paper to say, yep, we did that. That's it. You walk out of the bank with a piece of paper, which incidentally, your piece of paper is now worth nothing. So you just traded a very valuable piece of paper for a non-valuable piece of paper. That piece of paper that the bank gave you only becomes valuable in case of an error or a lawsuit. Well, or an audit, I suppose. Period. And then you get to take a piece of plastic out of your wallet and spend that money any way you choose, almost anywhere. You think about how few places insist on cash. Almost every place takes debit cards. Remember, I can remember when I was in college, even there were places where they would put up signs with minimum purchase. You got to spend at least $5, $10 to use a card. Then the card companies came down on the merchants for that, said, no, you can't do that or you'll lose your status with us. So now pretty much you could literally put like 42 cents on your debit card. If you just really needed a pack of gum, you're buying really crap gum if you're spending 42 cents, right? Like, what's it called? Big Red or what's the yellow one? Oh, juicy fruit. Yeah. But really, you could do that. You could take that little piece of plastic and you could bring it anywhere. And now you don't even have to slide it, right? We're moving into the next level of this, the chip. You just wave it around. Just wave it, put it back in your wallet, boom. That store is now like awesome. That little thing you just waved, we deem that has value. And we have taken some of your value for ourselves. Thank you. Have a nice day. It's kind of mind-blowing, right? You know, sometimes, and I know this is getting slightly off topic, but this is helpful. Sometimes my husband and I will go to the bank because we don't handle actual cash as much as we used to. Wouldn't you agree? Like, do you operate on a cash basis or do you use debit cards or maybe even credit cards and checks and e-checks and PayPal and all that kind of stuff? I would say, you know, 1 in 5 clients sends me a check, like, will overnight me a check or something. For the most part, they're paying online. So no matter how much money is changing hands, I see very little cash passing through my hands. And in my wallet, at any point, I have maybe $20 to $40 in my wallet max at any given time, right? And 2 debit cards, business, personal. That's it. Now, if I'm traveling, I might have $100 cash on me, maybe. That's it. We don't handle a lot of cash. And so sometimes my husband and I will go to the bank and withdraw a chunk of money, I don't know, $1,000, $5,000, something, just to handle the cash, because it can be very easy to get disconnected from the tangible aspect of money because we have so much emotion and stress and longing and frustration and lack and all this stuff tied up in money, but we don't often see the money. We log into the computer and there's numbers on the screen. We get, you know, email bank statement from our account, and there again, there's numbers on the screen. We might go to the ATM to pull out $20 or $40, and you get a little slip of paper with some numbers on it. But for the most part, you're not handling it. You may even have a job where they have direct deposit. Like, you don't even handle your paycheck. That doesn't even pass through your hand. So it creates this sense of disconnection from the actual money. So I know I'm talking about a couple different issues here. One is that money only exists and has value because we all agree and say it does. Then another aspect of this is, how often do you actually handle money? Unless you work at a bank. It's interesting because if you talk to people like tellers that work at a bank that just handle money all day long, or even merchants that handle a lot of cash, they develop a sort of neutrality about it, as opposed to if you've, you know, think about what's the largest amount of cash you've ever had go through your hands at one time. Imagine that times 10 in a single day. You'd be like, woo. Bank tellers are just like, yeah, you know, I counted it, it was $45,000. It's like, not, they get kind of neutral about it, right? They get used to it. But if you don't handle money a lot, that may be something you want to do, is just pull some money out of the bank just to play with it, just to handle it. Money has a smell, you know, it activates more of your senses when you could put your hands on money. Because when you're just dealing with digital numbers on a screen, it's all sight and that's it. And so, in fact, I had for a while, years ago, when I first got started online, I set up a thing on my mail. I don't even know how I did this. So that every time a sale came in, this cha-ching sound would go off on my computer. And if I was launching a product or something, oh my God, that was so fun. Because it would be like cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. But I could just be working or doing whatever, and a sale would randomly come in, that little cha-ching sound came. And it's like light and fun and happy, but it was also activating another sense. I could hear it. So if you get some money from the bank and you play with it, I'm not suggesting you spend it. Like, really, play with it, enjoy it, get a feel for it, and then put it back in the bank, deposit it back. But you get to touch that money. You get to put your hands on it. You're activating that sense of touch. If you count it and stack it, throw it up in the air, whatever else, you get to hear it. The sound that actual bills make, money makes. You can, you know, like I said, money definitely has a smell, and it's different in different countries. U.S. money has a very distinct smell. Right? And so you get to smell it. You get to see it. I'm not suggesting that you taste it. But activating the rest of your senses can really be powerful in creating a stronger connection with money itself. But really, ink on paper. So you might as well take it out, play with it, put your hands on it, right? And it started out as blue beads. What I think is interesting is, years and years from now, you know, when money becomes obsolete, there'll be some museum that has like $100 bills in it for kids and families to look at and be like, wow, is that what money used to look like? Wow. And they'll look at those thin, you know, like paper thin, really, these little thin strips of paper. And they'll look at each other and think, can you believe that wars were fought, like people died and killed over these little slips of paper just because we all agreed they had value? Crazy times. All right, so we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and look at how to untangle money, as well as some other tips. So stay tuned.
Visit CustomPendulums.com. Let us create a custom pendulum for you. You can use it for truth testing to know what's true. Full size or mini, our gemstones are for healing. They're one of a kind, and we have mandulums for guys. Visit CustomPendulums.com.
All right, welcome back. So we're talking about the untangle, right? And it's not, as I was saying, it's not the fact that you might not have money. It's what you have money tangled up with that's really keeping you stuck. If you start to untangle money from your desires, your self-value, your measure of success, of course money plays a factor in all of those. But if you're stuck around money, I would lay odds that you put far too much emphasis on money. So here's a question for you. What are you doing? What are you not doing or not enjoying right now in your life because you're too worried about money? Now, can you untangle that? See if you can enjoy or get that thing, that experience in some way, no matter how small. How could you partake of that even in a small way right now, even if nothing in your money situation were to change? Here's an example. Let's say that you really want to travel, but you think, I can't, I don't have the money. Well, what if you were to start planning a trip? I'm not talking about putting any money down. I'm not talking about spending any money you don't have. I'm just talking about baby steps forward. This will help you untangle. And one of the best untangling questions is, if money weren't an issue, what would you do? So in this travel example, if money were not an issue, where would you want to go? Like specifically, make a list of all the places you would go if money were no object. Now pick from that list like your top three locations. What kinds of things would you do in each of those places? Like if you were going to go to those places this year, what would you want to make sure you saw in each one? Write it all out. Make lists. You'd have to start researching, honestly. Because let's say you want to go to Greece. Well, you might know that you want to go to the Parthenon. And then you're thinking, but there's other cool stuff there. I'm not sure what else there is, right? Oh, I want to go to Santorini. But, you know, you might think of a couple of things you definitely want to see. But until you start researching, you won't even know what else there is to see. So this gets you engaged with this dream instead of it just being something that's held at bay because, well, I'd love to do that someday, but I don't have the money. This makes it more real, okay? Now, the next thing is to think about, why do you want to go to these places and do these things? Really think about this and write out your answers. There's no wrong answer here, but it's important to know why you want to do it. Maybe you just want to see the world, or maybe you've always been fascinated by a certain place since you were a kid. I mean, I can remember being just enthralled with Australia from probably the first time I heard a Men at Work song, right? So I was like an adolescent and I loved their accents. I made my mom buy like a tiny little jar of Vegemite because I wanted to try it. It was just like, I was obsessed. Olivia Newton-John, forget about it. Oh my God. I was like, oh my gosh, she's Australian. I remember watching Grease and thinking, oh, her accent's amazing. Kangaroos and koalas. And I didn't know anything about Australia. We didn't have the internet then. I couldn't just look stuff up. You had to go to the library and get a book, right? And the World's Fair in 1984, the World's Fair came to New Orleans. And I tell you what, my parents are funny. Even though we didn't have any money, there were certain things that they would just splurge on. And my mother knew that the World's Fair was a huge deal. Do they even still do World's Fairs? I don't know. But it was massive, 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 massive. And so she got my mom, my dad, and I season passes for the whole year to go to the World's Fair. And then they figured out where you could park for like $2 or something. I don't know. Park on the street. We'd go in the evening. And we went to the World's Fair all the time that year. And every time we went, I was like, I'm going to the Australia exhibit. Australia had this massive exhibit. They had this cool video where they played the song Down Under, of course. They had a restaurant. They had like everything, right? We never got to eat the food, but I was obsessed. I would go every time. And I can't tell you why I'm in love with Australia. I just am. I love Aussies. I love all of it. And that became a goal of mine, right? And my husband at that time was like, yeah, we can't go to Australia. And I told him, I said, you know what? We need to just make this happen. We need to just decide we're going. We were young. We were broke. We were both working, but we didn't really have like a lot of money. I was like, we just need to figure it out and go, because if we keep waiting, we'll never go. And he was like, okay, fine. And that's when I said, and by the way, I think we need to go for a month, because like the ads say, it is a bloody long way. And I don't want to go and feel like we didn't get enough time there. Or we might get jet lagged, which we didn't. And we did. We went and we stayed for a month. We actually upgraded to business class too, because it was a long ass flight, right? International flight. It was amazing. And then we went back several years later when we had kids. But and then, you know, sometimes when you build something up in your mind, or at least for me, I would worry like, but what if it sucks? Like, what if it's not as good as I've always dreamed it is? Oh man, did it deliver? It was 10 times better than I ever could have imagined. I will remember that trip for the rest of my life. And I love Australia. I know I'll go back again, but that first trip, we were really being powerful. You know, it was like, you know what? We're going to make this happen. And sure enough, once we set the dates and asked off from work, we started saving money. We started budgeting and we did it. We started saving points and mileage, you know, back when you could share mileage and stuff, didn't have all the rules it had now. I sound old when I say stuff like that, but you guys know I'm really not. But, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So maybe there's just a place that you just kind of always wanted to go since you were a kid. Stop thinking you'll never have the money. You'll never get there, right? Start planning that trip. What would you do? I bought a bunch of those books, right? Again, we didn't have the internet. So I bought Frommer's or if we did, it wasn't mainstream. Not Rodale's. I don't know. Those travel books, right? There's one, I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, I bought all those things, how to do Australia cheap, things you can't miss in Australia. And it's a whole country. Like I easily could have spent 6 months there and probably not see everything. But we did cram a lot into that first trip. And then we saw, we got to see Perth. We stayed in a little town called Joondalup, rented a house for the second time we went back. So we got to see Western Australia, which is my favorite place on earth. It's exquisite. At any rate, it doesn't matter why you want to go there. Maybe you want to know where your ancestors were. Maybe you saw it in a movie and it's the most like enchanting place you've ever been. Just be honest and write about why you want to go there. And then the next step is to begin to say, okay, how can I start this process right now? You know, maybe you can find a restaurant, even if it's an hour's drive away, maybe you could find a restaurant that serves that food. So you could go and get that little taste, literally, of it, experience it. You can research online. You could start finding out what's the best time of year to visit this place. That's definitely a factor if you're going to go to Australia, depending on where you're going to go, right? Because Queensland has a wet season and a dry season. You want to be there in the dry season, trust me. So there's things for you to research and to know about, and you could start that process now. That's how you begin to untangle money from what you want. Now, another thing you could do with money is to remove money bottlenecks. And this is a term that I use to refer to any place where you have inadvertently constricted the flow of money in your life. And one of the easiest ways to know if you got a bottleneck is to check for a breach of integrity. For example, if you owe somebody money, and owing people money is not necessarily constricting the flow of money in your life. But if you had an agreement with that person and you're not able to fulfill that agreement, and then you drop out of communication, that is a breach of integrity. And that's what most people do, honestly. If they owe somebody money they can't pay, they just avoid them and stop talking to them. The best thing that you can do is just get into communication. It's not a big deal. Everybody's had a point like that where they thought they could pay something back in a certain time and it didn't work out. And most people are very understanding if you stay in communication with them. So that way you get to stay friends too. Even if you can't pay right now, you can call or communicate with that person today just to let them know what's going on. I know, you'd prefer to wait until you have cash to send them. But the sooner you get into communication, the sooner you open up that bottleneck by resolving that integrity breach. And they will be so happy to hear from you. They'll probably thank you. By the same token, if you owe little bits of money somewhere, like maybe you have some fines or small fees that you owe, like library fees, or you have overdue annual dues, you know, that are maybe $50 a year or something like that, or you have late charges, domain names up for renewal, these types of things, take care of these as soon as you can. Because I know we tend to think that these little expenses don't matter much, but they're actually, when they hang around unpaid, they're creating money bottlenecks and they're contributing to your stuckness around your cash flow. When you get into action, no matter how small that action is, and start taking care of these little money issues, you open yourself up to receive more. And then finally, if you're stuck at work, usually that's because you're not doing the kind of thing that you really want to do. Like maybe you just took a job because you needed the money or the pay was really good. Or maybe you used to love your job, but you've changed and your passion for it is kind of gone. Or maybe all the people you used to like don't work there anymore. Could just be that you've outgrown this career, right? Or maybe the company got taken over and logistics changed, or people left and their jobs got absorbed. So now you're doing twice the work for the same amount of money. There's lots of reasons you might not be thrilled with your current employment, but there's lots of ways that you can get unstuck. I mean, you could start looking for new employment even if you have no intention of leaving. In many cases, just taking that action starts to open things up, because otherwise you're just like, oh, I gotta go to work. Every day is Groundhog Day, right? You're getting up, you're like, I hate this, whatever. Versus if you're like, let's see what's out there. You're taking an action even though it's really small, and you never know what you might find. You could start a side business related to your passion, or take a class or workshop related to something you're really excited about. Or join, you know, do volunteer work, or join a group or a club or a meetup group to meet some other people. One of the easiest things you can do if you're stuck at work is to do something different for lunch. I find, you know, people like us, when they're feeling stuck at work, they do the same thing every day. They either eat at their desk, or they order, like if the office orders, they order with that and they just eat at their desk, or they eat in the conference room. Try something different. Maybe pack a lunch to eat outside, or eat on a different floor, a different part of the building, or go meet a friend for lunch. Is there a nearby park you could walk to and eat there? Mix it up, do something a little bit different. And then finally, you can ask yourself, what is missing from your current employment? Like, what do you need more of in order to feel inspired at work? Here's a hint. Money is probably not the answer. I know you think, well, I just need to get paid more. Really, would that do it? If you were getting paid, say, 10% more, would you suddenly feel inspired to do your job? Probably not, right? There's probably more than that. Maybe you want to know you're making a difference, or you're helping people, or maybe you want more harmony or camaraderie at work, or maybe you want work that is more challenging or is more in line with what you thought you'd be doing in the working world. You can write out your answers to those questions and figure out how you're going to make that happen. Look, if you're not challenged at work, try sitting down with your boss and saying, you know what? I really want more of a challenge. Not necessarily more workload, but I feel like my skills are not being used to the best of their ability. Any boss worth their salt is going to figure out a way to challenge you if they know you want more of a challenge. I mean, that is... that you talk about showing initiative, that's huge, right? And if your boss is like, you know what, this is what it is and that's all it is, then I would definitely look for another opportunity, because you have outgrown that place and that environment. All right, so I hope you found this helpful in terms of how to get unstuck around money, how to think about money a little bit differently, how to get unstuck about work. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
I'm a sidekick, my name is Amy. You can really ask me anything. Spiritual ass kicking's what I do, and I'm here to mentor you. You can love your life and make a change. Do it the Amy Scott Grant way.